welcome to the lighter side of the dark side. It's your weekly freak show here on RenegadeRadio.com. Also, you might be listening to us on Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, everywhere. Google, Microsoft, YouTube. I'm talking very fast because I've got an interesting show tonight. Please, smoke them if you got them. This is a good show tonight.
Yeah.
My name is Dark Mark, the goth comedian. To my right, Hannah is going to be back next week, but we're glad to have her again. Horror writer, writer of some fucked up shit. And the sequel, Some Fucked Up Shit, colon, Ghosts.
I'm not making the same joke again this week, Mark.
Yeah, it's actually, there's a colon there, but Some Fucked Up Shit, Ghosts, Nicole Six.
Hello.
And Nicole, you had a little weed incident today, but we can't really talk about
that. Oh, no, we can, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But so we had a party for my client's new product, the patented grind and fill, which allows you to make joints at a party for fun. There'll be more information about that.
I thought that technology was already available. Actually, we've got some great guests here. Hold on 1 second. Let me, I got to get the camera back on. Keep the audio, but no, it's the power button. Well, Trevor's taking care of that, our fancy producer.
Technical difficulties.
No, but the reason I talk about weed now, you can put the, yes.
Hello, Dave.
There we go. Yeah, it's working. Okay. Two of my favorite people. One person that's been on the show before, but one person hasn't. I'm looking at the bright colored hair you've been on before. Every time we have a 420 show, something weird happens. We're going to talk about that later, but we don't have time right now. The hype, and I mean high, priestess of rap, Empress Kush.
That's right, bitch.
That's right. And comedy legend. Do you like it when people call you comedy legend?
Who would
love
that?
I am a legend.
This is Freeze Love.
And it's just a legend is you can believe it or not, and I've got a career like that.
There's only one comic I know of that's been on both Def Comedy Jam and Mr. Show.
Yeah, it was on Mr. Show and Def Jam. Yeah.
Not only that, House Party 3.
Yeah.
I got the hookup, Master P's comedy tour.
Yes, sir.
You were Dangerous Minds with Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes.
You were in Coyote Ugly.
Yes.
You were in, he's got credits.
Yeah.
Yes. You were also.
Mind you, it wasn't like I was like a starring in these things, though. You know, I was a character actor.
House Party 3.
That was my first thing, too.
Mr. Show, you were behind bars.
Yeah, Mr. Show was a great role. Yeah. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was a dope show. I missed that show.
Yeah, but you were Malcolm and Eddie. You were in the Hughleys.
Yes, sir.
And so we're gonna start off talking to Freeze Love, because Freeze Love, we started off late, so I apologize. And he's got as big and tough and you've been around, but this stuff you got to do at 9:30, and has to do with your wife. So
I was going to say he's got a date, sir.
He does have a date. Some romance involved. Well, I didn't know that you used to be a rapper.
Yeah, I started as an MC, man. I'm still an MC.
Yeah,
I'm an MC, master of ceremonies. Comedy is included in that.
I agree.
To all you guys that rap and gals that rap, you better do some comedy if you're going to be a master of the ceremony.
Well, Empress Kush has done some comedy. We were talking outside.
All right. You see what I'm saying? She's in the seat.
Yes.
Well, I saw you at the Improv last week, and we run into each other every couple of years. You grew up like Pasadena, Altadena.
Altadena, Pasadena, L.A. County, right. Southern California, man.
But you would, and I know you were talking with our friend Big Mike.
Yeah.
And you were talking about Altadena was no joke back in those days.
Well, L.A., yeah. Period. I don't care if you were from Monterey Park. Every city had its problems.
I mean,
it's Southern California. It was buck wild. It was different. The whole era was different.
I mean, right.
Crack was on the scene. Wherever there was crack, there was crime. And this is the L.A. story. And it's a trip because I left L.A. in 2003 and moved to New York.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not from New York. I'm from here.
Right.
So that was a culture shock late for me in life. I was 37 years old when I did that. And I did that for comedy. To me, in the craft of stand-up, you have to spend some time in New York.
Yeah, no, I know.
To learn this craft. That's New York.
Now, did you find yourself a little too laid back for New York?
Yes. I had to adjust. I was laid back. I was a little lazy. You know, this is just, L.A. is a easy city to do comedy in.
Right.
In one sense, that you don't have to really rip shows in L.A. You just have to be kind of famous or have the right agent or the right manager.
Right.
And in that aspect, it's not a tough crowd. You're not going to have a tough crowd in that aspect, but it's an industry crowd, too. So industry shows, they don't really laugh.
Right.
They're looking at you. They're critiquing you. They're seeing if you're right for what they're trying to do.
Right.
They're not necessarily there to be entertained. Whereas New York, people are there to be entertained. They spend their hard-earned
money. You better
money.
Fucking entertain them.
Hey, what the fuck? Who is this guy? Get him out of here. Get funny and come back.
No, I moved to New York and lived there briefly. I got in a car accident, had to move back. But, yeah, I remember some of the Long Island shows, McGuire's.
Governors,
like,
big up to Governors out there. Yeah. Yes. Those are real crowds. People work, man. They'll tell you, hey, look, I spend my hard-earned money. This guy's funny as my grandmother.
Right.
She's dead.
Right.
You know?
It was funny because when I got there, I would do all these rough rooms. And a comic told me, they're like, I got a room for you, but I don't think you can do it. And it was an ice cream parlor. And there were families there.
Where was this at? In Long Island?
Yes, Port Jefferson.
Okay.
And I'm like, let me do it. And I was the only comic that actually didn't break, did a whole set clean. And there was a family that kept coming back because they liked me so much.
Wow, that's
dope. But he'd only see me with these just shouting at these crowds. But I don't want to talk about my career. I want to talk about somebody that actually has credits. That's you.
It's all good, man.
You were telling me you were in the hip hop scene in the late '80s, and this is before N.W.A.
Before N.W.A. We signed our very first. I consider myself being in the entertainment business as a professional since 1987. That's when I signed my first contract.
31 years
with Profile Records.
And by the way, Empress Kush was three.
I was three.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
I mean, 13.
I'm old,
I was 13.
I'm a whole.
No, I wasn't born yet.
Oh, wow.
No, I was three. I really was.
Okay. Empress Kush lies about her age. So go ahead.
I usually don't.
But which way?
But yeah, we were signed. I was in a group called AWP, Atmosphere World Power. 360 was the name of our clique, our posse. We had about a good 12 groups under the umbrella of 360 with my man DJ Broadway, who still produced King T, Exhibit,
right?
The Alcoholics, you know, these. My people that I started with are still in the game, and they're still making music. So for me,
The Alcoholics are still making music?
They're still making music. I mean, and I didn't start with, this is all before the Alcoholics. In 1987, we were a Los Angeles rap group out of the West Coast, signed to an East Coast label, Profile Records.
Which is the label Run-DMC was on.
Which is the label Run-DMC was on, Rob Bass. He was on that label. Yeah. And this was literally after making a demo and sending out our demo to every record company that we could.
They were all in New York.
Yeah, and that's where the majority of the record companies were. I mean, but we sent to L.A. too.
Right.
It just so happened Profile got at us. And they said, look, we want to do a 12-inch deal.
Right.
And then we was like, wow, the world was like, we got a record deal. And we were on this East Coast label, and we were doing real hip-hop.
Now, were you doing shows with, like, Ice-T and the rappers that were around at that time?
I did a show with Public Enemy.
Here
in Beverly Hills. I did a show with Tribe Called Quest.
Wait a second. Public Enemy in Beverly Hills?
Yeah.
How did that go?
They used to have a club underneath the Beverly Center called The World.
Really?
Yeah, it was a dope club. They also had Funky Reggae, which was another spot that was right off the Beverly Center.
Public Enemy, as militant as they are, as they were at the time.
Yes.
Did a show at the Beverly Center.
Yes. At the Beverly Center and killed it. And my group, we opened for them.
Wow. Yeah.
And Ice-T was there that night. That was a big deal. I mean.
I was trying to think of hip-hop, West Coast hip-hoppers, I'm sorry, before N.W.A., Ice-T is the only one that came to mind.
Well, you had King T, you had Mixmaster Spade, Toddy T. Rodney Owen, Joe Cooley. There was a whole West Coast scene. But mind you, our stuff, it wasn't even about West Coast, East Coast. It was about hip hop.
Right.
And that's all you had. It wasn't even about defining and repping where you're from. That didn't even happen yet.
Because
75%
of the people were in New York.
Exactly. Or Philly.
Right.
New York and Philly were pretty much the only two cities that were producing people that were getting on records.
Right. You were going to say something, Nicole?
No, I wasn't. I said, yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah, and I was going to say West Coast.
Yeah, see,
the West Side.
We weren't even.
We weren't there yet. That's 90s.
Trying to get.
We're not there yet.
Hip hop.
Yeah, when
the
did West Side start?
90s.
Well, that started. Yeah, pretty much in the '90s. But I mean, N.W.A. Which, when we were on this label,
right?
Profile N.W.A. coincidentally came out,
right,
and blew the lid off of. It was like, who the hell are these dudes? They're talking about. You know,
fuck the police.
Yeah, all of this. And so our record label was like, hey.
I was
going
to say, it was much angrier.
Yeah.
And
our stuff
angry.
Was just trying to get a deal. So we were hitting the bar of getting a deal.
There was dance hip hop, and then there was fuck the police, fuck the establishment.
And they changed. And the label said, you guys, you're from L.A., write some stuff like this.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, first of all, that stuff that you they're talking about, we're living.
Exactly. It was the 90s.
And yeah, we are not about to get on a record talking about selling guns and dope and,
right.
And gang. No, are you kidding? That's them? No. No, we make music to make people dance.
Right.
That's what we were on. We weren't revealing that side. It, it was like insane that they were, but we weren't ready to go there.
Right. You probably weren't even cursing, huh?
No, we were cursing, but it was more like, we were into the craft of what hip hop was at that time, which was a lot of sampling, a lot of, you know, beats and rhymes, boom bap. You know, KRS-One was hot at that time.
Sure.
You know, Biz Markie was hot at that time.
Right.
And we were trying.
There were two reasons to have it. You had it to dance because you just wanted to relax and have fun after dealing with all that shit, or you had it because that shit's happening and you're angry and pissed off. It's a lot like rock and roll that way, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's that's music in general. You know, and for us, where our studio was at was a street called Sacramento Street in Altadena. This is a hot street. The street was hot, baby.
Yeah.
And people on it. And we had guns, we had dope, we had weed, we had hoes, we had everything on one little block.
Wow.
And we would get into it, the sheriffs was coming through. It was hot. And our studio was in the heart of that block.
Wow.
So everybody in there, it was like when you came up that street, you were getting checked. And if you said, I'm going to the studio, you had a pass. It didn't matter if whatever, if you was a blood, this was a Crip neighborhood. If it was a blood and he said, I'm going to the studio, you got a pass because the studio was like the heart of everything.
Right.
And if you were going to the studio, you weren't going to hang out. You was going to make music. Mm-hmm. So people, you know, the other homies in the hood respected that. So it was like, okay, you got a pass. But after you drop them lines, get your ass up out of here. And that's how it was.
Well, you were telling that story at the Improv. I was talking with you, Big Mike. About back in that day, I mean, it's fucked up. It's still fucked up, but back in the day, if you had more than two black people in the car, they would stop you.
Oh, that's man, I still don't ride with three black people in the car, man.
Really?
Nah, no. Listen, L.A., driving, nothing that's going on right now is new to me.
Right.
It's not new. Only thing that's new is that it's being captured on film.
Right.
That's all. And it doesn't matter. I'm not shocked by that because people knew it was going on then.
Well, they I was already thinking you just replace crack with meth now.
You know, it's just the LAPD, man, and the LA sheriff. You got to remember the dude who ran the sheriff is in jail right now. Right. Sheriff Bach is locked up. Yo, you think there's foulness? This is this LA. Right.
Things are run out here. We just don't ask questions. A lot
there
of us.
There it is. Listen, right. After living in New York and living in a city where they have the mob, where they got this and they got that, they got the Russian mob, got all these different neighborhoods got different. Right. They didn't have that out here because they already knew.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the mob was set up for when the mob got here, there was already a mob here.
Right.
It's called the police.
Right.
Boom. That's
the combination between entertainment and money that comes from different places and all the deals people already have to make. Everybody already knows. We all know. We just don't say anything or talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like this. If you know, then you really know that you're not going to do anything about it.
Right.
Right.
It's the way it is. It's the land. And it's really this country. It's America, baby. We're the biggest gangsters on the planet.
You just follow the money right up to the politics.
Yeah. I don't, please stop us before we start talking about Trump. But
that wasn't even it. It doesn't matter. It's all the politics.
Well, actually, whoever's above Trump. But
exactly.
But
yeah,
before we get
Trump's
into that.
Trump's new.
Right.
Somebody put him in.
Yeah. Anyway, so, but how you got into comedy is just everybody kept saying you were funny.
Yeah, I've been funny my whole life. I've always been that dude. I don't even if I would end up going to L.A. County, I'd be having people laughing in L.A. County.
Right.
It didn't matter. Through school, through whatever, I was just that dude.
Yeah.
And
I got to tell you, I've been in L.A. County and I wasn't funny. I just kept to myself.
Hey, you just had, if you be there long enough.
Yeah, I wasn't there long enough.
You have no choice. Yeah. And it was, you know, laughter releases tension, man.
Mm-hmm.
Laughter makes people calm down.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about laughter, it supersedes a lot of stuff, man. It supersedes racism. Funny is funny.
Yeah. Oh,
period.
Yeah. Of course.
And one of the hardest times, which makes stuff funnier, is when you're in a situation where you're not supposed to laugh.
Oh, that's when
it's even funnier. So if you're in L.A. County Jail,
right,
and you see a sheriff come through. And this sheriff just happens to have a nose that looks like a Volkswagen coming at you. You point that out.
Yeah.
And everyone else laughs because it's that shit. You know what I'm saying? Right. And people that normally would be your enemy, because you made them laugh, are like, hey, man, thank you.
Right.
Thank you for taking my mind off or whatever. Now,
right.
Officer Volkswagen knows he would get upset, yeah. But even the other sheriffs would be laughing.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do?
Well, actually, I crack people up a couple times, but I was a little too scared to have a full set. So, but how you got into comedy?
You mean in the jail?
Yeah. We'll talk about it off air.
I want to hear that story.
Yeah, and we'll talk about it a lot. Don't get it twisted. I didn't grow up going in jail.
When I was in jail, it was a whole traffic thing.
Yeah, it was a traffic thing for me, too. But, yeah. You know.
I almost grabbed the black newspaper. It was a whole thing.
It's not how you got there. It's now you're there.
Right.
And I don't care how you got there. You're there now. So it is what it is. Oh, you're from Altadena? Okay, well, we know exactly what you are.
Right.
Okay.
Now, how you got into comedy, because we have a limited time with you, so I want to make sure I get all these things I want to talk about. And I want to have you back for a full hour.
I want to be back, too, man. Yeah. I'm going to be back.
Absolutely.
God willing.
But you were bagging on a producer.
An engineer. An engineer.
And somebody was not as handsome as Trevor R.
I was just me being me.
Yeah.
And the guy kept messing up. He had a toupee on. And it was obvious. You know, you could wear a toupee and it's not obvious. It's like, hey, good work. I mean, this was like
a skunk
a rug.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, come on, man. Nobody's going to talk about this.
Yeah.
And so I started calling him Harry Wigman. You know, uh-huh. So I'm like, yo, Harry Wigman, run that back. And people are laughing, and you know, and he kept messing up. I said, yo, Harry Wigman, I need you to push that toupee to the front like you mean business. And that was it. Everyone lost it. He started unplugging stuff and turning stuff off. They're like, what are you doing? What do we got to record? He's like, I did not come to work to be chastised by a professional comedian.
Wow.
And I was like, dude, I'm not a professional. He's like, yeah, right. I know a professional. I work in this industry. I'm not here for you to practice on.
Right.
Wow.
And so my man, Kelsey Maxwell, K-Max, who's still my friend of this day, said, Freeze, come out the booth. Let me talk to you. And he was our manager of this big, huge, massive hip-hop crew, 360.
Right.
And he says, yo, man, listen, you're a good rapper. You are. But right now, the game calls for an extraordinary rapper.
Right.
And that's not you, homie. But I will say, you're the funniest person I know that I've ever met. You should do comedy. Mm-hmm. Now, come on out this booth, and let's give this kid Exhibit A a try. And I'm like, yo.
Exhibit,
who later became Exhibit. He dropped the A, but his name is...
Exhibit A?
Exhibit A is what his first
that makes perfect
rap
sense.
Name was. First name was Alvin. It was Exhibit A.
Wow. Was it still X with no E?
It was. Maybe. I'm not even sure, to be honest with you. But he was an extraordinary rapper. And that was exactly what that crew needed.
Right.
And he went into the booth, and I went outside. He hadn't busted rhymes or nothing yet. And my boy says, yo, he's telling the truth, Freeze. My homie Reese Clark. He's right. Like, Freeze, you need to do comedy. And all my other homies are, yo, he's not lying, homie. You really need to. You need to quit bullshitting. And he says, I can
get you. And you had no aspirations to do comedy.
No, I wanted to do comedy. In my head, I was going to become a rapper.
Well, that's what everybody was doing.
Yeah, everyone was doing it.
No one's going around. You were going to be Donald.
But rap was the end.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If I could rap, which I could, decent enough, I could rap better than a lot of these dudes out here. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yo, I'm going to go in there and become a rapper and then switch off and start doing comedy.
So you were going to be Donald Glover before there was Donald Glover.
Yeah. Way before that. And right. It was.
Because rappers weren't acting.
In all actuality, yeah. I was.
Yeah.
Because right after that, I started comedy that night.
Right.
I remember the date. It was November 3rd, 1992.
Wow.
And we went to the Comedy Store with my man, Danny Grayson, who, rest in peace. He introduced me to Dante, who you know, who gave you your first time up ever. Yeah. And I went up. I did my thing. Eddie Griffin saw me.
Right.
And he's like, yo, man. How long have you been doing this? I said, this is my first time. He's like, nah, I don't mean the room.
Right, right.
I mean comedy. How long have you been doing comedy? I'm like, this is my first time ever. He's like, nigga, I want you to be my opening act. I want to teach you because you are natural. Nigga, That's this is your first time.
And like, everybody's supposed to bomb their first time. You're the first person I know who hasn't.
But you got to understand, and you know, to be fair to the truth, you got to remember, before I ever did stand-up comedy, I had already performed with Public Enemy.
Right.
I'd already performed with Tribe Called Quest.
I'd already performed
with Joe Cooley and Rodney O. I knew how to command the stage.
Right.
So it was just knowing how to command the stage and then being the novice of not having something prepared, but just to rely on myself.
Right.
Just being funny.
And to be honest, that is what the quest for comedy is. The more you can be comfortable and relax and command that stage with confidence and be yourself, be your honest, you know, your point of view, your honest point of view, whether it's right or wrong, as long as it's your
sincere,
hey, that's what makes comedy tick.
Right.
You understand?
Being in the moment.
Being in the moment. And people, you know,
I think all art, if you're genuine, it translates the best.
Yeah. Absolutely. I agree with you. All art.
Right.
You know, and it's difficult to be a comedian because each audience is a new canvas.
Right.
You don't know what texture that canvas is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you have to be true with yourself, because at least if you're true with yourself, you know what colors you're going to use.
Mm-hmm. Right. And just by the way, and I've never seen this personally, but I know that you've talked about this. You have bombed.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. That is part of this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you can't handle bombing, don't come to comedy. Get out of here, man.
Right.
That's part of this. Because you learn from bombing.
Right.
You learn from bombing. You can, you know, cockiness and conceit, that doesn't work, right?
Right.
You gotta be
humble. I was just warned that on your first time, because like I was asked to like do a guest spot. I didn't end up doing it because I do public speaking and stuff.
Okay.
And some people think I'm funny. They said, you're gonna bomb though, because it's your first time.
Yeah, don't claim that.
It was like some sort of like universal accepted belief between comedians that no one knows exactly what they're doing on their first time.
Hey.
I've seen people do great on their first time.
Let me tell you. I did comedy for a good solid 2 years before I bombed.
Right.
I was under the stupidity that I couldn't bomb. Like, I really thought, some people bomb and some don't. I'm one of the ones that I don't bomb.
Right.
And when I did bomb, man.
That must have been the worst.
Oh, my gosh. It was, it was like.
Was that opening Freddie Griffin or just
no,
at the club?
No. It was in a contest.
Oh, that's even worse.
And it was the first contest I ever entered.
Right.
And it was a tri-county comedy competition between L.A. County, Orange County, and San Bernardino County.
Wow.
And it was held at John Wayne Airport.
Right.
And I went out, you know, I went and I hit the stage, and the main thing that really messed me up is we drew numbers to see who was going to go first, all these comedians. And as we were drawing, before we started drawing numbers, this guy walks up. And they say, hey, hey, guys, this is one of the judges. This is Rodney King's attorney. Rodney King
Yeah.
came to this comedy show, this contest. And it was the night before he started his civil trial.
Wow. That's...
Okay? The night before. The next day, not the criminal trial, but the civil trial. Right. The one where he gets paid. And they wanted him to come to a comedy show and relax. But see, here's the problem. I know Rodney. I knew Rodney King. I grew up with Rodney King.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got a personal relationship with Rodney King. Rodney King stole my bike.
What?
Yeah, he stole my beach cruiser.
Did you beat his ass?
No, I didn't beat his ass. He was bigger than me. Rodney King was a little older than me.
So I mean, were you watching? Were you watching it going, good for him? He stole my bike.
I saw Rodney King stealing my bike. First, I saw my bike leaving the window frame.
Right.
Right, and I was like, oh, hold on, that's my bike. And I run outside, and there's this dude walking my beach cruiser down the street. I'm like, hey, homie. I turn around, it's Rodney King. I'm like, Rodney King, hey, I know you, man. I knew him from the Boys Club.
Right. Boys Club.
I'm like, yo, that's my bike. And Rodney King looked me dead in the eye and said, is your bike blue, cuz? I said, no, my bike is beige. What are you talking about? And that's my bike.
Right.
The beige beach cruiser. What do you mean? I'm not talking about a blue bike. He reached in his pocket and pulled out a spray paint can and started painting my bike blue.
Oh, my God.
Right in front of me. He's like, yeah, well, this bike here is blue, cuz, so it can't be yours.
Now, when you're watching the beating where you're like.
No, I was like, yeah, I got fucked. Get him. Get him. Can we get along? Can I get my bike back?
Oh, dude.
But
so no, it was you talk shit about Rodney King on the I know.
But Rodney King, you know, the thing is,
did you talk shit about him at the conference?
I was about to. I was like, this is I won. I'm about to pull the truth out. Oh, this is gonna be hilarious. And so his attorney says, listen, I'm one of the judges, and I'm telling you right now, if anyone says anything about Rodney King, you're being disqualified. He's not here to be made fun of. He's not a part of anyone's joke. He's here to relax. He's got a big case, as you all know, tomorrow. We don't even just pretend like he's not here.
Well, talk about a comedy killer.
Exactly. You want a comedian, the worst thing you could tell a comedian is not to do something.
Right. Mm.
It's just in our nature.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Andrew Dice Clay.
Right.
He was told not to tell some jokes by...
Dick Clark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you just can't do that, man, because it's mad. If you want a comedian to ruin your show, tell them not to ruin your show.
Right.
They will ruin your show. If you don't want them to ruin your show, just don't mention them ruining the show.
Right.
So don't, did everyone get disqualified?
Well, I didn't get disqualified because I wanted to win the contest. I wanted to get $5,000 and $5,000 worth of hip-hop clothing. They had all these designers, wow. Dada, and, you know, I was
FUBU,
like, oh,
all that
right,
stuff.
FUBU, you know, I was like, oh, $5,000 worth of gear, oh, I'm not going to mess this up.
All right, so Rodney, you can have the bike.
Well, let me tell you, they said draw numbers. I reached in the hat. I was the first person to reach in the hat, and I pulled out number one.
Oh, bite the bullet.
So I'm like, wow. And I up until this point, I had never been up first.
Really?
In my whole 2 years of doing comedy at that point, I had never been up first.
Yeah.
And now I'm the opener. I didn't know what this was. I didn't know, you know what I'm saying?
You didn't know how to open.
I didn't know how to open. Mm. And all I knew is that I couldn't talk about Rodney King, who I knew. Who stole my bike, and I get to talk about that now.
And everybody in the audience is conscious of this.
I got my bike back, too. I said, hey, we'll go on and paint it then. And I'm going to have the homie come through, and I mentioned the homie's name. And he's like, oh, that's your – oh, hold on. Here's your bike back. I'm like, yeah.
Oh, I'm glad there's a happy ending.
Yeah, but anyway, that night, I wanted to tell that story. And right. Dude said, if you say it, you disqualified. I saw that money in them clothes flapping away, and I was like, nah. I'm not letting that happen. So I didn't address it. I didn't address the obvious that Rodney King is in the audience the night before the biggest trial of his life. Right. I
didn't do it. And the audience is...
hindrance,
right.
I walked out and I looked, I was shook. And I learned right then that when you walk out as a comedian, if you look shook and it's not part of your act to look shook...
Right, right.
You've bombed before you even grabbed the mic. Because people look like... They're looking at you. They want to see if you're confident. Then they're cool. Because they're like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing. We're going to laugh.
Right.
But if you come out there like... They're like, we got to sit through this... You know,
especially at a contest.
Right, at a contest. Right. Hey, I grabbed the mic. I said something right off the bat. Boo! And I was like, hey, hold on. I didn't even say boo.
Yeah,
hey,
yeah,
wait.
Then you're done.
I just got bombarded with boos. That's and man, that had never happened before. And I was like, oh, wow. See, I mean, I really felt like maybe I shouldn't do this.
Yeah,
maybe this isn't my call, you know.
I'm getting douche chills. You were there. You were there at the comedy show when I did Dante's thing.
Brother. Hey, bombing is the feeling is just I can't describe. People right. say, "Oh, you have so much courage." It's like walking a tightrope, but you have to remember the rope is only 3 feet off the ground.
Right.
Yeah, you're gonna fall. So what, man? Get back on the rope. But right. I just fell.
Right. So and the first time, I used to think, I don't know what had happened to me if I finally lose, and then I lost something.
And you'd been winning.
And when you're used to winning, and all your confidence built into, I'm so fucking good, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden you have to deal with it. And I knew eventually I'd lose at something.
Let me tell you, the next night, I was, Eddie Griffin said, nigga, get down to the Comedy Store. I got the Irvin Arthur and Associates, the agency. They coming to see you.
Oh.
Mitzi's here. She's going to make you paid regular if you rip it. You know you're going to rip it. Come on down. I was like, hey, man, a bomb last night. He says, so what? Nigga, that was last night.
There you go.
Right.
Come on down here. Get down here. And I was like, okay, cool. And I was like, he's like, be here at 8 o'clock. And this was like 6 o'clock. And I'm in Pasadena.
Right.
The Comedy Store. I'm like, man, traffic, oh, man. So I go through everything it took. I probably made it there at like 8:15.
Right.
The agents were walking out, and I was like, hey, Eddie. He said, oh, he's here. Sit down, he's here. Mitzi, can he go up next? She said, put him up next. So I said, cool, I'm waiting to go up. And then Damon Wayans stepped in.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He told a piano player, hey, put me up next.
Sounds familiar.
I said, Damon. I'm going next, man. He said, who the fuck are you? And I said, I'm the nigga that's going next. That's who I am, homie. I'm going next.
Wow.
And he said, well, if it's like that, go next.
All right.
And I was like, I was just like, you don't understand.
You had to do it.
It took me so much to
get there, yeah. Had to get. Mm-hmm.
I went up next and I ripped it down. All I talked about was bombing.
I was thinking that's what you should do. Go up there, you take that self-deprecation.
You know, I talked about the whole night.
And right. You tell the story you wanted to tell on stage.
Right. And boom, I was made a paid regular at the Comedy Store. I got picked up by Irvin Arthur and Associates. And
well, and it was that fucking genuineness too, because like they can see that, they can relate to it, and it was a fucking funny story, so you crushed it.
And let me tell you, here's the twist, because I told you I had a Damon Wayans story.
Right.
That happened. That was on a Monday night, right?
Right.
The next day, because I still wasn't a full-fledged comedian, I was still working in the film industry.
Right.
I started a film that was on a Monday. That Tuesday, I started the film Blank Man.
With
Damon Wayans. But I didn't know Damon Wayans. I didn't even know he was in the movie. I just knew I was starting a film the next day called Blank Man. I'm at the
Which
sound
card. Which is a great
card.
Film, by the way.
Awesome film. I was in that film, too. I got cut out. Honestly. But I'm sitting there at the sound card, and here's Damon Wayans. And I'm like, hey, man. He says, yo, Freeze Love. I'm like, yeah. But I'm at work, right? You know, I'm like, yeah. He's like, you are hilarious, lad. That was, dude, you are hilarious. What are you doing here? I said, I'm working on this. He said, they cast you?
As a boom operator?
I'm like, no, I do sound. He says, what? you do sound? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, well, what? Because I used to do this whole routine about how my mom was a Crip, you know, and what it was like growing up eating blueberry pancakes. Blueberry. I was on a little league team called the Reds. She made me quit. You know, she used to shoot at us for leaving Lincoln logs on the floor. And he was like, how? I thought you're from, I said, yeah, I'm from the hood, but I got sense. He's like, but your mom is a gangbanger. I said, dude, that's a joke. He's like, I said, my mom didn't even cuss. He's like, what? He says, so you're a boom operator. You're working on, I'm the star. This is my film. I'm like, I didn't know. He says, and you made all of that up. Why would you pick your mom? Did she see? I said, yeah, but you got to understand, man. I'm from the hood.
Right.
And gangbangers and all of that is my everyday life. And these are people that some of them I love. I want to show that some of the shit they do is just ignorant.
Right.
So I picked a character that everyone can relate to. Everyone loves their mother.
Sure.
But I'm going to put my mother, I'm going to make my mother do some of the most ignorant stuff you could think of.
Right.
To express how I feel. Like, this is my mother. I love her. I put up with her ignorance and her craziness and her wildness. It drives me nuts, but I do it because I love her. And these are my people. And he's like, he said, that's brilliant.
That's subversive. Yeah.
That
it's
is
really
brilliant.
Good.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, well, thank you. And I ended up working on that film. And Damon, thank you. Thank you. And thank you, Mike Binder, the director, who was also a Comedy Store comedian.
Yeah.
They put me in the film. I had a scene. It was a great scene. I ended up getting cut out. Because I was funnier than you, Damon, well, in that scene. I'll say it.
I could listen to your stories all day. It's 9:32. I know you got to go.
Yeah,
But before you do,
okay.
Charlie Murphy's birthday was today.
Man.
You opened for Charlie Murphy for years.
8.5 years.
You shot at each other on the 45. Snoop Dogg Murder Was the Case.
Yeah, we met on Snoop Dogg Murder Was the Case.
Video.
And years later, when I was living in New York, he had finished the Chappelle show. He was doing comedy with Donnell Rollins and Bill Burr.
Right.
And he had just finished up a tour with them, and he was going out doing his own tour. I ran into him, and he says, yo, man, you want to go on the road? I was like, yeah. Hell yeah. I need it. Thank you. Thank you. Because, you know, I was going through my own, you know, trials and tribulations of life living in New York. Mm-hmm. You know, not having the family base. You know, I had my wife. God, I love my wife because we were going through it.
Right.
We was going through some New York times. You know, New York is a city that will whoop your ass.
Well, I know.
Doesn't care about anything you're going through.
And by the way, Mrs. Love, he said he loves you. So it might be a little late, but he did say he loves you on
there. Let me tell you, I got the chance to go with him, and it ended up being for 8.5 years.
Right.
And today was his birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Here, when he passed, he had another birthday, and that's in the next life.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I've literally traveled the world with this dude, from Amsterdam to Finland to Norway, Scotland, Iceland, Australia, New Zealand.
And he's another guy that didn't think he was going to do comedy.
He didn't,
because Eddie was so successful.
Eddie is the grand wizard, man. Eddie is the dopest to me.
Yeah.
That's the dude.
But
and that's why I respect Charlie Murphy and people. To me, you have to respect Charlie Murphy, because Charlie Murphy started doing comedy at age 47.
Wow.
What?
Yeah. He did not do stand up. Charlie was a writer, he was an actor, and he never stepped to stand. It's kind of hard. You got to understand, at age 47, he said, I'm going to do comedy. Not only did he have to, and he was a star already from the Dave Chappelle show. He was already a star.
Right.
And at that level, he stepped to this craft. And not only that, but he stepped to this craft, and his younger brother was
the greatest of all
time. The epitome of this, the man of this craft.
Right.
Whatever, and they look alike. So you got so many things against you, and he stepped to it. And then he said, I'm going to do one more. I'm going to take a badass, dope-ass comedian and put him right in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to follow him. And he told me, he says, hey, nigga, listen, I brought you here to do what you do. don't hold back, don't, nigga, put it out there. Because I know once I can follow you, I'm doing this shit the way I want to do it, nigga. So don't hold back.
Wow.
You're only gonna be on for 20 minutes, but and don't go over 20 minutes, nigga. But don't hold back. Do that shit. And we rocked that out for 8.5 years.
Wow.
And God rest his soul. I have the utmost respect for that dude.
Well, I do too.
Miss him, man, because he was as genuine as anyone could ever be, man.
Right.
He was a real dude.
Because I was trying to think today, who has been a brother that you know, there's four Baldwin brothers. There's only one Alec.
Yeah.
Maybe Casey Affleck, but that's the only one I can think of that like reached the heights of their brother. He didn't quite get. I mean,
he became Eddie a huge Murphy guy. Is a phenomenon.
Right.
That was
never be seen again.
Hey, man, and he changed the game. He changed it from nightclubs and you know, burlesque to rock star.
Right.
He took it to that level. Everything you see out here now, big, huge comedy specials, he did that.
Right.
He changed the game, man.
Right.
And he's a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant comedian. Characters, voices. I mean, he's across the board in the world of funny.
Absolutely. And he did all that before he was 25.
Before he was 25, man. So, I mean, I really, you know, I don't know if I could have done that. If that would have been my younger brother, I think I probably would have just been like,
that's your thing, man.
Yeah, you know, so I really respected the dude. And he put in the work. He put in the work. He wrote.
Yeah.
He took the L's. He grinded it out. Mm-hmm. And he became a hell of a stand-up comedian.
Absolutely.
Man.
Well, I hate to let you go, but I know you got to go.
I thank you guys. So nice meeting
awesome
the both
meeting
of
you.
I'm going to watch so I can hear your story, Empress, and I'm rooting for you. Much love to you guys.
Thank
hey,
you.
Man.
Yeah. I'm gonna get you in contact with Nicole's book so your wife can read that.
Aww.
Both of her books.
Cool. Thank you. My wife likes horror stuff.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm going to be honest with you. It scares me too much.
It's pretty fucked up.
I respect
scare you.
That title to say, oh, yeah, I'm not going to watch
fucked
that.
Up shit.
I wanted people to know what they were getting
into. My wife
into.
Is the one to be like, yeah, put that on. Let's see that.
So we're going to and check out The Legend of 420 on Netflix.
Yes, and have a nice fat doobie and learn something and laugh. All the comedians are there are funny. The stories are excellent. It's something you got
to
see.
I can't wait to see it. But speaking of 420, I'm going to play Empress Kush now, and we're going to talk to her. Freeze.
Awesome.
I want you back, dude.
Man.
And listen to your stories. You're on Corey Holcomb's podcast a lot.
5150. I got a lot of stuff coming up. Follow me on Twitter at Freeze Love Comedy, FreezLuv. Also on Instagram, same name. Also hit me on Facebook at Killa Wells, KillaWhaleZ. Mm-hmm. All right?
All right, man.
Pleasure.
Man, thank you so much,
you're
man. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Very nice meeting you all.
Hey, check this out. Here's Empress Kush. High tech now.
Oh, no, you're not going to be able to hear the bass. All right, you're going to have to check this out on Spotify or buy it. 4:20 a.m.,
4:20 p.m. This will get stuck in your head.
4:20 p.m., 4:20 a.m., 4:20 p.m., 4:20 a.m.,
Thank you.
So, yeah.
So that's going to be stuck in your head for the next
that's
week,
fun.
Like me.
And you're going to have to listen to it over and over and over again to try and hard to get it out of your head. Do that on Spotify. Get like a millionth of a cent every time you stream it. So
and watch it on YouTube because I, as Nicole knows, I do a lot of research on my beautiful female guests.
Hours and hours of hard, intense research.
And the video's great. You're lighting up the biggest joint I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
It's that larger than you.
That was great. You know, we just discovered this guy. We were filming this video at the Venice Beach Drum Circle, and one of my people spotted him from, like, so far away because he had this giant blunt, and they were like...
So that wasn't your prop,
Oh, no. No, no, no. This is just a random guy who was there at the Venice Beach Drum Circle.
With a 10-foot joint.
With a 10-foot blunt joint thing. Yeah. Oh, gosh, what was his name? Something Bear with a blunt on the beach or something. That was like his title.
All
that
right.
Everyone knows him by. Yeah.
Yeah,
so
if you're
in
Venice Beach, you know, yeah.
Yeah, we love him. So he was really cool.
So yeah. Empress Kush, we had you on the show in 2014.
2014, 420. You were blessed with the world premiere of We Smoke the Blunts.
Yes, I was blessed with Your Highness.
Yeah.
Got to meet you. And but you're from the Valley.
Well, actually, I was born in La Crescenta. I lived in the Valley for a long time, but it's right. All 818.
Well, that's because I was watching videos of you before Empress Kush with your real name, which I don't know if you want to give on air, but it was repping the 818. And you say, is La Crescenta the Valley?
La Crescenta is kind of in between the Valley and like the SGV,
right?
San Gabriel Valley.
Because I'm repping Tarzana, and
that's
definitely
the
Valley.
Valley.
Yeah,
that's the Valley.
Yeah,
I did live.
I was in Sherman Oaks. It's the Valley, but it's not the
Valley. She used to rep Sherman Oaks, but
that's right.
She got out.
It was
of
still 818.
I used to live in Van Nuys.
Oh, that's the real Valley.
That's the Valley.
Well, yeah,
and
that's where
I
it
have,
is. So, like, I lived on Ventura and Van Nuys, and then you go to Van Nuys, and I saw things during the daytime I can't unsee.
Oh yeah, there was plenty of tweakers to go around. And one time I found a shank on the sidewalk near my house. Mm. It was a giant razor blade about this long and this wide, and it had blue electrical tape wrapped around the other side so one could hold it safely while stabbing someone.
Excellent.
Right.
And then they cleaned the blood off of it and left it on my sidewalk.
Yeah,
scary place.
Yeah, they call that Van Nuys cutlery. So we smoked the blunts. I was all excited. And then... you have a new song, High and Dry.
I do.
Now, what's happened the last 4 years? I'm concerned. We listened to your song. Have you been touching things that are a little harder than marijuana?
I have, and I wore my Got Drugs shirt here, which is actually designed to catch your attention, and then somehow you've got to see the back of my shirt, which, you know what, I'm not even going to bother because I'm going to probably pull the... headphones out, but it's for harm reduction organization that I run the SoCal chapter of. It's called Safer Raving.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and harm reduction is very important. We can go into that now or in another episode if you want. It's not exactly, I mean, we're focusing on my music, but that's also an important
okay.
part of my life.
Well, great.
But anyway, so drugs. And I did get into that for a while.
Mm-hmm. So there was a detour music.
Yes. So there's a couple reasons that I got out of music. The first one is a shitty boyfriend that I got with. It was a horrible mistake. Tortured myself for 3.5 years. This awful person. And so it kind of ruined my life completely.
See, when I hit on you, you should have said yes.
I fucked up.
Yes.
But, so he destroyed my self-confidence. I specifically remember one time when he told me, you're no Iggy Azalea. And it's so funny because when somebody recently heard my song High and Dry, they said, wow, she sounds exactly like Iggy Azalea. So fuck you, ex-boyfriend.
Well, fuck you, ex-boyfriend. I was going to get to this, too, because the show's kind of out of order. I had a whole plan, like I was going to go freeze you, but he had to leave early. But there's not a lot of white female rappers. There's
not
a lot of white
rappers. White
rappers
no. in general.
No, there's a lot. Yeah. No, there's more white rappers than you think. I mean, in a post-Eminem world,
okay, so
there's a lot of...
Okay, let's rephrase this. There's not a lot of good white rappers.
Okay, I'll give you that. But
yeah. Like, there's
for
actually,
sure.
I would say, more female white rappers. Because you got Lady Sovereign. You've got Iggy Azalea. You've got... there's more. Help me out.
Oh, gosh.
No, I mean,
I'm probably thinking of the same person of you, but I cannot remember her name either.
It's okay.
But I mean,
there was What's Her Face with Gucci Gucci. That's kind of a one-hit wonder, but I fucking love that song.
And the Catch Me Outside, How About That? She's doing rap now.
White shoes, white horse, white Porsche.
That sounds terrible.
Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible. But there's one song. Does she actually say
"Catch Me Outside"? How about that in the song?
She does not. Oh, hey, but
there's a whole generation, a whole genre of music right now that is white female rappers, kind of like girl powery. Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, like technically, Kesha is technically.
Mm-hmm. She does some rapping, yeah.
I think it's easier for women to get those record deals probably than men, actually.
You think?
Yeah. Well, because there's not as many female rappers in general.
Now, who inspired you to rap?
Eminem.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely Eminem. I learned to rap by studying his flow and rapping along with the Eminem Show, which to date is still my favorite album of his.
Okay.
And I sucked really bad when I started. No one will ever hear how horribly white I sounded at the time. But I don't sound as white anymore except when I talk like now.
Well, no, that's the other thing I was going to ask. Now, when you rap, do you consciously, because... With white rappers, some of them really like go hard, like yo, you know, black voice, and then some like the Beastie Boys, they just do the regular white voice.
Yeah. No, I do change my voice. I think that
historically speaking, there are more white male rappers than people give it credit for. I was thinking only modern, because right now, like I'm saying, there's this whole genre of girls who just rap. The internet changed things.
But there's a whole underground Aesop Rock atmosphere. There's a lot of, and then you got Yellow Wolf. There's a lot. There's
but if
a
you're
lot
a pretty girl, it's easier to get gigs. I mean, that's the opposite version of sexism.
Yes, well, true. Speaking of pretty girls, you were saying. I'm sorry.
Oh, I just was remembering, but I've forgotten now. So give me a moment.
You're talking about being white. You're inspired by Eminem.
Yes. Yes, changing my voice when I rap. I do so that I sound better, so that you'll actually want to listen to me. Interestingly, my protege, Shorty, we'll get to her later. She's on a new song of mine that is not going to come out for a while.
Well, I didn't know you had a protege.
I do, yeah. We have such an amazing story, incredible story. Hopefully we'll have time to tell it. But anyways, still haven't said what I was going to say. Right. Okay. So every time she shows my stuff to her friends, they say, "Oh, who's your black friend that's rapping?" And she's like, "Nope, she's white." And then they all trip their balls off.
Wow.
Yeah. Which I think it's funny. I think I still sound white, but I guess that's because I know I'm white.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty obvious now. Now fans that have responded to your YouTube and your songs that are out there, are they mainly white? Or are they across the board or what?
I don't know. Yeah? I don't know.
I know you have a Latin following just based looking at the comments on your YouTube videos.
Oh, really? I don't know. I haven't looked in a while.
Yeah. Tell me about Shorty. Tell me the Shorty story.
Oh, right. Okay. Shorty, oh my gosh. I love this girl to death. She's my niece, but not by blood.
Okay.
I used to date her uncle, and so I've known her since she was like 4 or something. She's 19 now.
Now, the uncle wasn't the bad boyfriend, was he?
No, he is the only boyfriend I've ever had who was like chill and didn't fuck with my head a lot, I think. You know what?
Anyway, trust me, we've all had fucked up.
Doesn't matter. He was cool. You know what? He was cool. He was really cool to hang out with. But anyways, so Shorty... we were not in touch for a long time after that guy and I broke up, which was back in 2008, I think. Anyways, so we were out of touch for a long time. She hit me up recently, several months ago, and we just really connected. As it turns out, she grew up to be about the same person as me.
What person is that?
Crazy bitch.
Okay.
So to speak. But, sorry, I lose my train of thought easily.
We notice. It's all the weed. We understand.
I'm not even high right now.
I know, but it's the residual weed.
Yeah,
it's
maybe.
It's the residual highs. No, go ahead. So Shorty is a crazy bitch like you.
Yeah, she is. She's been through a lot of shit. That's her story. She'll tell it later when she comes out. She's an incredible rapper, singer, dancer. Look up her Instagram, Shorty XIP. She's insane. And she does amazing makeup, too. A lot of talent in this girl. Super, super gifted, super skilled. And so, anyways,
like I was saying, there's a whole generation of, I'm going to don't take offense to this, party girls, girls being on the party scene who have started rapping.
She is not a party girl.
I know.
Right.
But I'm saying younger women under 25.
It's a generational
thing. Even though
thing.
You're a little bit, I don't know if you're older than 25.
I'm pretending not to be.
Okay. But right now, with the internet, you can do anything. And mm-hmm. women are starting to just do the same things guys used to do back when they were younger.
Right. Which is good.
Mm-hmm. What things?
Well, rapping. I mean, the whole story he just told, like, there weren't a lot of women doing it back then.
Oh, just in general.
There were some great fucking women, though, that were in hip-hop when I was growing up.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Such as?
Do you want me just to... I mean, okay.
Lil' Kim.
Like, yeah. Well, no, like, fucking Missy Elliott. I mean, yeah just...
I Lil' Kim it up in my songs sometimes. I
like,
could be.
Okay, so there was so many outstanding women, because you had TLC, you had... Right. You had Aaliyah, you had
Lauryn Hill.
Lauryn Hill. Oh my God, Lauryn Hill. Like, and in choir, we sung a lot of Lauryn Hill. It was just different. There was just a lot of
right.
them. Now it's all right. I mean, I like Nicki Minaj, but you know.
Well, I'll tell you what's exciting is that you're in the studio now.
I am, yes.
With some heavy hitters.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I'm so blessed. Okay, so I was producing my own stuff for a really long time. And then I just happened to make a friend with somebody who's a mutual friend with this guy, Darren Vegas. And if you Google him, you should find an article that was written about him in the OC Weekly.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy is badass. His beats are insane. He's a platinum producer.
Yeah.
He was on Death Row. So, I mean, he knows what's up. He went through a lot of bad breaks, which is how I ended up having access to him. And so the first song that I recorded with him is called Ghetto Bougie. It's not out. It's not going to be out for
Ghetto
a while.
Ghetto Bougie.
Yeah. But that's a song that Shorty...
I want to use that to define the entire genre of what I'm talking about. That
well, so you're right on the cusp. You've got the song.
Yeah. It's a really fun song. Copyright, Ghetto Bougie, trademarked. Don't fucking steal it, anyone. But yeah, so Shorty's on that song. And you know what? I completely have forgotten what the point of the story was.
Don't worry about it. There doesn't have to be a point of the story.
All right, cool. Well, that's the story. So there you go.
Are you going to be putting out an album or just keep putting out
yes.
little songs?
Yeah. So I put out the single 420. I put out the single High and Dry.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to wait a few months while I'm putting together an EP. So then that's when Ghetto Bougie is going to come out along with whatever other dope-ass shit that we come up with.
And besides the music, I was on your YouTube channel for hours. By the way, the 420 video, she's in a bikini with a leather jacket.
Smoking a giant blunt.
Yes, smoking a giant
blunt. Oh, yeah. I understand why
I
just spent
like
hours
watching
this.
I had that one on a loop all week. But
you're like 4th of July.
Yeah, so so to speak. But you have a video where you teach people how to roll a blunt Empress Kush style.
I do. Yeah, it's very important if you want to have a superior blunt smoking experience that you do it my way. And so,
really, I didn't think there was a bad way to do it.
Yes, there definitely is. I have
too much saliva.
I have smoked some terrible, terrible blunts. Oh, good God, people, stop wrapping your lips around the blunts. Disgusting! You guys really want to smoke everyone's spit? Just like, okay, let me show you how to do this. Let me show you how to fucking do this, people. When you smoke this blunt, just put your fingers like this around the end of the blunt and just kind of hold it so that your lips go on your fingers instead of the end of the blunt, and then we can all have a better experience. My blunt addresses that issue. And
yeah,
I'm
it's 10 minutes. It's very thorough.
My
yeah.
circle
yeah.
kind of
well,
likes
it's also fun.
Sharing blunts.
I fancy myself a little bit of a comedian as well, so I had, I had some fun with the video. You don't necessarily have to take 10 minutes to roll this blunt, but I probably do because I'm very meticulous, and that's what it's about. Most people don't have the patience to roll blunts like this, and that's why they're not going to have an Empress Kush experience, but that's why I'm the Empress.
Well.
Trevor, our producer, was taking notes while you were talking. Anyway, God, where's the time going? It's such
a
great
show.
Go ahead.
With
you
the
say.
Grind and fill, you won't have to have patience. You just need to have enough weed.
Right. Do you always have enough weed?
No, sometimes I run out because I'm busy paying for other things.
With weed.
Or I just didn't have time to run and get some, and then it's not cool.
And is Shorty smoking the weed too?
No comment.
Okay.
She pleads the fifth.
All right. But you're Empress Kush, so she's rapping with you.
Yeah. And Shorty's 19. She shouldn't be a party girl. That should be implied.
She's not. She's
she
not
can't
a
get
party
into
girl.
Those places.
No, substance without judgment. We're not judging. But
I definitely judge underage drinking.
Anyway. I
don't judge anyone. No judgment.
Anyway, before we have a fist fight bust in here. So Empress Kush, how do people get a hold of you?
Okay. You're going to look me up on Empress Kush 818. Go to Instagram. I have a Snapchat. I don't use it. I don't get it. I'm not friends with Snapchat. Snapchat is not friends with me.
Right.
I do have a Facebook, which is also Empress Kush 818, but I don't use it. Don't bother. You won't be able to see my posts anyway because of the algorithms. And then
and your MySpace is probably there, but it's not being used.
It is not there. Empress Kush does not have a MySpace. That was before.
I still do. Mine's still active.
I kind of regret getting rid of mine because now there's just this Andy Six fangirl who is the top. All my SEO is perfect except my MySpace because I deleted it. So now there's just weird fangirl who comes up.
Can I plug one more thing really fast?
I was going to say, well, please.
This is not music related, but it's extremely important for the entire nation and the world. My friend and I have started a new political party. It's called the United Human Race Party, unitedhumanraceparty.com. And check it out because we have a love-based, solution-focused platform. We're looking for members, especially those who are going to attend meetings, and then candidates. And we've got to, you know, get a certain number of members and stuff before we can officially file with the FEC.
That's great. So, now you tell me.
Yeah. Well, you know
what? I was telling somebody we needed a third party today.
Oh, perfect. There you go. Now there's one. And
and so when's the song going to drop, your new song with Jordy?
Oh, that I haven't set a release date yet because I need to record the rest of the EP. So I'm working on a couple other songs and then some that are not even started yet.
All right. And but check it out. You're on Spotify.
Am on Spotify. You can find me on Spotify. Just
And YouTube,
Amazon Music, Google Play, iTunes.
Just subscribe to her on Amazon or on Spotify or YouTube and Spotify.
Yeah.
And you'll get the next release.
Yeah, buy my shit if you want. Subscribe, follow me on Spotify, whatever you do on Spotify. Listen to my shit. Listen to it over and over again. You know what? Even if you're not actually listening to it, just put your volume on mute and just keep streaming it over and over again so I get paid those millionths of a cent.
I'm going to play something around Spotify right now. But before we do, Nicole.
Mary J. Blige.
Mary J. Blige is great. She's more of a singer than a rapper, but she's amazing.
Still a good artist.
But before we go, Hannah's going to be here next week, but it's been a delight turning back the clock and having you sit here with me. It was a great couple weeks, great couple shows. What do you got going on?
The new release for as I talked about last week, that story I was writing is coming along. My friend, who also loves weed, we were there earlier at her place when your name came up because she already knew who you were.
Awesome.
She'll be illustrating it, and there'll be a new release party in probably early August. And that's what I'm working on right now. And
that Nicole Six on all social media.
Rock on.
Except for MySpace. But Empress Kush, still light. We're going to have you on again, and we're going to talk more about we just scratched the surface with both you and Freeze Love, as I suspected. And check me out, Goth Comedian on all social media. And we're going to come out not playing my song, Trevor. We're going to play High and Dry. And everybody have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Oh, so much fun, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Are we done? Awesome.
Huh?
We stopped recording. Is this over?
We stopped recording. We're told. Okay.